why would God allow Job to go through everything he went through? Now, it would seem appropriate, you know, with this question about Job, maybe we should take the book of the Bible called Job and do an in-depth study there. However, 2 weeks ago, we talked about why does God allow bad in his world? Why is evil present in the world? And I think it would be a little bit redundant if we got into Job and went through all that. I think we'd come out with exactly the same thing that we talked about 2 weeks ago. So I don't want to do that. You are welcome to, if you like. We're, as I understand it, our new website is launched and it is up and running. William, have I got that right? Probably. Definite maybe. Okay. If it's up and running, then they tell me that sermon should be on there. And so you can look it up. However, I am going to try to give a direct and quick response to that question. So maybe the best place to begin is with a quick recap. There is a guy, and his name is Job, who lived, I don't know how long ago, 3,000, 4,000 years ago or so. His name is Job. It's spelled J-O-B. And there is a book of the Bible that is named for him and contains his story. And so if you'd like to, you're welcome to turn to page 359 in the Pew Bible. That is the book of Job. I am going to do my best to give you a quick recap, but you don't have to trust me on any of this. Feel free to look these things up for yourself. Feel free to read for yourself. Job chapter 1, and I am going to start in verse 1. Okay, so it tells us, Job chapter 1, verse 1. In the land of Uz, there lived a man whose name was Job. This man was blameless and upright. He feared God and shunned evil. So, I mean, it starts us right out with, here's this guy, right? He is a great man. Now, by blameless, it doesn't mean that he's sinless. It means he's really trying hard to seek God. There are no people who are without sin in their lives, except Jesus. He was the only one. So Job is doing his best to seek the Lord. Verses 1 through 5, they go through and they tell us he was rich. He had 10 children. Everything was going really well in his life. And he sought God with all of his heart. He was so upright, not only would he offer offerings for himself to make sure that he was right with the Lord, he offered offerings on behalf of his children to make sure that they and that their families were okay with the Lord. So this is a good, godly man that we're talking about. Then, in verse 6, the scene changes, and what we get is a picture of heaven. God is in heaven, and the angels come before God. And Satan comes with the rest of the angels as they're presenting themselves to God. And the implication here is because he's got some business he wants to discuss. Here's where it really gets interesting. Verse 8, God says, listen to this. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil. I'd be like, thanks, God, but I'd rather you not put that kind of confidence in me if it means you're going to turn me over to Satan, right? Which is what happens, really, in the course of this thing. Satan says, you know, the reason that Job follows you is because you give him all this good stuff. He doesn't have a reason not to follow you. If you took that away, he would curse you. And God says, no, he wouldn't. Now, I think the reason that God says, have you considered Job, is because he knows why Satan is there. He's an all-knowing God. And so why wait for Satan to bring it up? God just goes ahead and cuts to the chase. So Satan says, turn him over to me, right? And God says, okay, he's not going to curse me, but you can't kill him. Over the next 41 chapters, 42 chapters, I guess, the total of the book, this is basically what happens. Satan goes in and kills all 10 of his children. That's rough right there. Satan takes away his wealth, and he gives him some kind of skin condition that gets, he has boils and pustules, and he's in horrible agony. Now, to add insult to injury, Satan has friends and a wife who come to him and say, you've obviously sinned against God. And Job says, no, I haven't. And they're like, you should just go ahead and curse God and let God kill you. It would be better than living like this. Just do it. And Job says, I'm not going to curse God. But over the course of time, Job sort of crosses the line there. I mean, he doesn't curse God. He won't do it. God was right from the beginning. But he does get kind of in God's face and say, why are you doing this? This is unjust. I think, God, you need to stand trial for what you're doing to me. And in the end, God restores Job, gives him more children. I know that doesn't take away the pain of losing a child, but gives him other children, restores his wealth, restores his health. But in the end, God steps up, an almighty God who says to Job, who are you to think you can get in my face? Where were you when I created the world? What makes you think that you understand the things that I understand? Do you see all the things that I see? Do you understand all the factors I understand? This is an infinite, all-knowing God, and here is this tiny, finite human being who understands nothing. And Job is sort of appropriately silenced at that point. Now, the question on the table is, why would God allow Job to go through all of these things? Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. First, and probably foremost, it vindicates God. You know, right from the beginning, God says, let me tell you how all this is going to play out. Job is not going to curse me. Satan says, oh, yes, he will. What we learn from that is that God is right. God is just. If he says this is the way it's going to happen, that's the way it's going to happen. If Satan tells you something's going to happen or says it's going to work this way, it's probably not. It's a lie. So it vindicates God. The second thing I'd say is that Job's suffering demonstrates just how great God is. And you may go, what on earth are you talking about, Ben? You know, what you talking about, Willis? It develops our understanding of suffering in this world. God's not playing favorites with people. Good comes in the life of everybody, the just and the unjust, the righteous and the unrighteous. Bad things happen to everybody in all of our lives. But no matter what we face, the book of Job teaches us, God is at work. He is taking care of all of these details and factors and calculating things out that we don't see and we don't understand. It works together with the book of James, for instance. James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4 says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. You get that? When we face trials, God is doing something in us to mature us, to help us. It sort of backs up Romans 8:28 and says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. Let me just say, if you're suffering right now, if you are in a very painful place in life, what I'm saying isn't making it any better, is it? What you really want is for the pain and the suffering to stop. But my hope is that in time, you know, as the pain subsides, as you're able to move on with life, that you will begin to see the depth, the maturity, the good things that God might bring out of a really bad situation. You get, I'm not saying God causes everything that happens, but I am saying God uses everything that happens for our good. C.S. Lewis is credited with saying, I don't know whether he said this or not for sure, but that pain is God's chisel, and he uses it to shape us into his image. Pain is a megaphone that God uses to rouse a deaf world and call us to himself.